minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things green and gold. My name is Mike Welland. I'm joined by Matt Fralick and Gage Bridgeford, as with the OTAs wrapping up and mandatory minicamp starting next week, we're going to take a look at Mark Murphy's comments on his Packers.com column, Murphy Takes 5. And I got to say, for a guy who's pretty much maligned by a lot of the fan base, he's got a pretty good troll game going on.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. Like, not, the only thing hotter than Mark Murphy's troll game is the temperature right now in Wisconsin. It is very humid. And sometimes it's not the heat, you guys. It's the gosh darn humidity. But yeah, Mark Murphy, he's experienced with these. He's done these for a while. So I think he knows, and definitely is being coached by the excellent public relations firm, or the public relations internal staff of the Green Bay Packers. They always do a great job. So they obviously were very selective and strategic with the answers and the questions they allowed him to answer.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm sure that some of the ones that he got are a little less free to print and probably not the best things to have out there. But they had a good mix here of, well, you know what, let's get some serious topics. Let's get some kind of joking topics and make it fun. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what this whole thing is about here, is for it's to be lighthearted and whatnot. And the clapback in the very first paragraph of the article, or the very first question, might have been the highlight of my Saturday so far.
For sure. So as we kind of read through it, quick reminder as well to find us at Pack-A-Day Podcast, wherever your favorite podcast platform is. Let us know how we're doing. Give us a like, a subscription, and all that fun stuff. We really do appreciate it, and does help us out a great deal. But before we can get to the questions, let's take a look at Murphy describing the off-season program. He talked about it being held virtually. There's going to be 3 weeks of in-person practices, and that he did make note of the guys who weren't there, but he did make the very point that it is voluntary. And that their three-day mini camp, which will be the 8th through the 10th, is the only mandatory part, and they can find players who failed to attend, and that young players feel it's important to participate in some ways that it will help their chances of making the team. Talking about workout bonuses as well. And they are planning on having fans in attendance for training camp, which I think is a pretty big deal, as long as the virus is under control by the time we get to training camp. And they're encouraging vaccinations, all that kind of stuff. And so I think a pretty good start to the column there for Murphy.
Definitely. Like, it's, you know, it's funny just the way they do this. Like, you know, the Packers and all teams and coaches throughout professional sports have been required or highly encouraged to do these Zoom calls. And I'm a big fan of them. I think it gives us direct access to players, to coaches, to insight. And it's kind of funny, like, how they just do this in a old school blog format, written format, which is fine. But I don't know if that says more of just how they, you know, the time commitment that goes into doing those Zoom calls are 15 to 20 minutes. If maybe Mark Murphy didn't want to just be taken off guard, or like, I don't know why you couldn't just take five of these questions and answer them live. You'd get a lot of people listening, but regardless, good updates on stuff at the top. Like, that's some really good, actual tangible information. Some of these questions or statements rather from, the fans around the green and gold that we'll get into they're good, they're quality, but like really like the tangible stuff, take away the in-person practices. We're getting 12 of those a couple times a week. Just, you know, the whole breakdown of what you can expect as a fan if you're trying to get to training camp, which is fantastic. I don't see here off a quick glance anything about bikes and the usage of bicycles for the young Packer fans to be able to let the players borrow, but I hope and pray that's still a tradition that stays and is back in 2021.
I tend to think it will be, just because when he talked about having a regular in-person training camp with fans in attendance, I think at that point, with vaccines now available to 12 and up, I think that's a pretty safe bet that they're going to try and have it as normal as humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole, like, with the bikes thing, I think that they'll do, I have to guess, I think they're going to do bikes to a certain extent. Like, maybe they'll do only vaccinated kids and families like can be there. And I know everyone's like, oh, well, you shouldn't have to show it. I don't care. This isn't my decision to make. This is theirs. I think that they'll probably do something like vaccinated kids. If you have proof of vaccination and your parents and your family does, you can have your bike out there. Because, like you said, they want to try and get it back to normal to a certain extent. And having fans at training camp will be a humongously different thing just from a year ago. Like, a year ago, the only training camp bits we ever got were the like one reporter that was allowed to sit 10 streets over with a super camera to record everything because they were like, nope, we're not having anybody nearby. And that's fine. This year, they're trying to make it different. So they're trying to make it. They're trying to make it to where fans are still involved because this is a fan first organization more than any other team in any other sport. Green Bay is a fan first organization because they're owned by the fans. So I like that they're getting the fans back out there. I unfortunately won't be able to attend any training camp events, but I am. But for the people that do get to go, I'm glad they had the opportunity to do that after not being able to do anything last year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's going to be a pretty big thing to have back. It'll be one huge step back toward normalcy this fall. Getting there fully back to normal will be having a full Packers training camp, having places like Kroll's open. People can go and hang out, watch training camp, watch practice, and go get autographs and meet players and so on and so forth in the parking lot following that. So now let's jump into the very first question. And that was from Dwayne, who tried to go after Murphy and Gutekunst and got a pretty strong clapback from Murphy, who thanked him for his email because he told the jerk Gutekunst to get off his butt and make a play to get Julio Jones. Murphy's response was thanks for the email, as well as the 20 previous emails you've sent in the recent months. And interestingly, there is not a single question among those emails.
That had me laughing. That's so funny. Like, that. Not only do they have it archived to 20, that's how many emails he sent, but just Dwayne being the consistent man, stubborn, I'm sure he is, just not a single question, just statements being sent from his Outlook email account is fantastic.
Absolutely. And then he responded, well, I appreciate your persistence and passion. I tell you, we have tremendous confidence in Brian. In his relatively short tenure, he's completely turned around the fortunes of the team, putting together a talented squad, including the most players voted to the Pro Bowl last year in a 28-8 record and back-to-back NFC championships. Moreover, he has a great working relationship with Matt LaFleur and Russ Ball, who have managed their salary cap smartly and have us well-positioned for the future. So outside of him making fun of the guy for not sending a question, the fact that he says that Gutekunst is a combination of LaFleur and Ball, I think, is a kind of a big thing, that the three of them do trust each other.
Definitely. Like, that's so important. And, like, especially when he references, you know, the 2017-2018 consecutive losing seasons, that was one of the big problems that the Packers had at the time with the old GM, with Mike McCarthy still there, Aaron Rodgers not – like, you could see it was blatant. Like, we could see it on TV for 2.5 hours. Like, can you imagine the conversations and the snarkiness that happened behind closed doors and just the combativeness and the fact that, you know, we can definitely see this as an – you know, outside the organization. Like, we can see that there's really no animosity between the upper management and the general manager and, you know, the EPV, like – or EVP. Like, it's – it's great. It seems fantastic. I have a lot of confidence in all three of those gentlemen, and it's just another. It's great to have Mark Murphy speak to that and, you know, kind of put it in perspective. Like, hey, we weren't that far off 4 or 5 years ago, Dwayne, where we had, you know, absolute turmoil in this locker room.
Yeah, especially when you consider how other teams are, like just the other franchises where there is a disconnect from the top down, where the head coach and the GM don't get along, or the GM and the executive vice president don't get along. And just if you don't have that consistency from the top down, it shows. There's a reason that the best teams generally have a good relationship in the front office, and between the front office, the coaching staff, and then everybody in the front office gets along together. There's a reason that those teams generally are the best teams, and that's where Green Bay is at right now. You have Goot and LaFleur seem to be really in sync. Russ Ball and Goot are always working to get this team positioned in the best situation possible. And my favorite thing is watching people on the internet question these guys who are professionals at what they do. You're mad that Gutekunst won't get Julio Jones. Well, Julio Jones is going to cost a lot, and he, like, contract wise, is going to cost a lot. There's a reason that the Packers roster is in the situation that it is, and these guys are the reason they're there. Also, great, get Julio Jones. Here's the one problem with that. Julio Jones doesn't play corner, and that's where Green Bay lost last year. Two, Green Bay has been in the NFC Championship game for the last 2 years. Does anybody know off the top of your head, have the Atlanta Falcons made the NFC Championship game in the last 2 years? Just real quick, does anybody know?
No.
So then, Dwayne, go ahead and do yourself a favor. Just turn the email off and just take a chill pill, man, because clearly these guys might know just a little bit more than you do. Not saying a lot, just at least a little bit more.
And I respect Dwayne's, you know, armchair GMing skills, but realistically, Dwayne, with all due respect, like, that's just it's a really terrible idea to think Julio Jones would be brought in. However, I do think you could get him for relatively cheap as far as, you know, draft picks go and whatnot, but realistically, it just doesn't make sense. The Packers have no cap space, so to bring him in for a one-year deal would be pretty stupid, and it just doesn't – it's not – we're not here for the long term. It's not a long-term decision. It's a short-term decision. And at least, you know, for me, it's nice to see Julio Jones' name in the mix for a possible trade instead of AJ Green and Odell Beckham, because I've literally lost all patience with those types of trade rumors.
Yeah, you guys are spot on. So let's jump into question number two. This one's got a little bit of serious stuff and a little bit of fun as well. From Ken, who says, "Dear Mark, you've done a great job, but don't let the bastards drag you down. Washington needs a name, and he suggested the Generals. But then, unprompted as a response, Murphy talked about the situation with Aaron Rodgers, saying he has divided the fan base. The emails and letters he has received reflect the fact, and as he wrote in this column last month, they remain committed to resolving things and want him to be their quarterback in 2021 and beyond. They're working to resolve the situation and realize that the less both sides say publicly, the better." Let's talk about that part first. That last sentence, I think, is very, very telling. The less both sides say publicly, the better.
I'm going to go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to jump in there. I think that is a more or less direct shot at what we've seen with certain star athletes in not just football, but just across sports. Like, obviously, the Julio Jones situation is the one I'm going to reference really quick. We all saw the Fox Sports 1 debacle where Shannon Sharp calls Julio, and then Julio may or may not have known that he was on live television when he said, "Nope, I'm out of there." That is the most public thing that has been said. Aaron has not said a lick of anything to the media. I don't care what anybody has reported. I don't care what Pro Football Talk has said. I don't care what anybody else has said. Aaron has not said a word to the media other than talking about horses at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
And that's meanwhile, the Green Bay front office also not really saying anything. All they've said so far, we remain committed to him. We want to get this resolved, and we want him to be here. This is why Green Bay is one of the best organizations in football. They're not letting all their dirty laundry hang out in the media. They're handling it behind closed doors. Who cares what everybody else is reporting? Every single other reporter said, "Oh, Rodgers is gone. He wants to go here. He wants to go there. He's doing this. He's doing that." Rodgers hasn't said anything. The Packers aren't saying he said anything. They're just going on. So Murphy's saying, look, we're doing our part. Aaron's doing his part by keeping it behind closed doors. And that's we're doing everything we can to make sure that nothing gets twisted around by other people.
And it's one of those things, too, like where the way this all came out, it sucked. Like, whether or not you want to crush Adam Schefter for it, be my guess. Like, the way he did it, I don't really necessarily approve of it. I know other people on the podcast on Packaday and other people in the Twitter sphere have disagreed with that take, and that's fine. That's like that you can say what you want about that. But like, at the end of the day, from a straight, like, I took a couple PR classes in college, big flex, and like, when you're wanting to minimize the impact of like negative PR, like, you need to manage public perception, and like, the way everything came out was horrendous. So at this point, the best thing you can do is shut up, keep everything in house, close the door behind you, scream at who you need to, talk to who you need to, get on the phone, get, you know, send care packages, gift baskets, whatever, and control the narrative that the public's seeing. Because then once we forget about that, because we live in this like recency bias society, which is fine, like, let's make sure that the microwave minutes kind of fade, give us a couple weeks, and then we have a press conference of some sort or a public statement or some sort of social media video, something where it's like, okay, we can tie a bow on the situation and we are getting ready for August. We're getting ready for preseason, et cetera. So like, I think it's okay that he wants less, you know, decides to say less. And I think that is just an overall kind of addressing not only Aaron Rodgers and his camp and his friends and his agent, but also other people in the media, and obviously, you know, people that work under Mark Murphy, which is literally everyone. So Kudos to him. Strange how he decided that Ken's question about the Washington Generals' potential naming, he decided to throw this little tidbit in there. Again, kind of a troll job by Murphy and the rest of his PR team.
For sure, and I do like the fact that he did say something like that. And then just to lighten things up a little bit, let's talk about the Washington potential Generals, because it looks like they're going to be the football team for one more year. But he makes a good point. With the Washington Generals, they've been well known for being the team that always plays the Globetrotters, and they always lose. They are 1 in over 16,000. That's not the best name for a football team if you want to be considered a in the same league as a comedy team that is intentionally meant to lose.
Or what if it's the opposite? What if they bring the name and they're going to flip it? The name's only known for losing. If they win two games, they're automatically better.
Right. And if you're maybe they're just not meant for the old peach basket leather round ball game. Maybe they're better with a, you know, an oval shaped pigskin game. Like maybe that we're putting a round peg in a square hole. Like we need to literally have it where it's like, okay, we're just playing the wrong sport, guys. Like the Washington Generals can figure it out. Good pop culture pull from Murphy, though. I like that. And, you know, the one win and 16,000 losses, ballparked it, I'm sure. Who could possibly know if there's 16,000 losses? Maybe there's more than one win across there. But I'm not a huge fan of the Washington Generals name. I still think it is kind of controversial or polarizing. I would like something a little bit less. Just give me something different. That's all I'm going to say.
As of January 29, 2020, they had 3 wins since 1952 and nearly 19,000 losses.
Yeah, he didn't even fact check it.
Jeez, come on, terrible. Mark. Get it together, man.
Terrible.
Okay, this could just be me. I don't hate the Washington football team name.
I don't either. I think it's okay.
I when it first was announced, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. But over time, I'm like, I don't mind it. I think it's cool because it's different.
Agreed. Now a team from every other sport did it. So if Cleveland became the Cleveland baseball team, then it might start getting a little old and a little bit stale.
I don't like that. That sounds bad. This could just be me. The Cleveland baseball team sounds like somebody talking about baseball and they don't know the name of the team from Cleveland.
Yeah. No, I think if they were to change the Washington football team's name, I kind of like the idea of going to former players and talking about it. Like Murphy played for him and talking to some of those guys like, hey, what do you guys think it should be? Obviously, keep it non-racist, but what do you guys think it should be?
Right. Yeah.
And
I totally agree.
And give them a little bit of a say as a part of the history.
Oh, no.
So the next question, another very relevant one from Greg from Toluca, Illinois. With reports of people getting vaccinated and the states working to get back to normal, as a season ticket holder, he wanted to ask, what are the current thoughts on the number of fans allowed at games? Being from downtown Illinois, obviously making reservations for people driving in is a big factor. And Mark Murphy responds that they're planning to have 100% capacity for the games this year. They're hoping COVID numbers will continue to decline. They get more and more people in the community vaccinated. They've talked with local health officials. They feel good about the vast majority of seating being outside. And they are confident that there will be full stands this fall unless there's a dramatic change in the virus. That's great news. That is huge news that they're planning on full 100% capacity in Lambeau this year. That cannot be stated well enough.
Oh, it's awesome. Like, you know what kind of sucks, though? Like, having gone to that divisional game versus the LA Rams was so damn fun with 8,000 fans, because not only did you have to make up for it being 10% of the crowd, you like had to cheer harder, but the leg room, I mean, I'm 6'3", and it was fantastic not to have to be cramped in. You could spread out on those bleachers, and now we're going to have everyone back, and I got to, you got to pass the beers down. People are touching it. It's a whole thing. Like, it was really cool to be able to spread out, but, you know, good for the local economy to be able to sell more tickets.
Sounded like the most like first world problems I've ever heard. Man, I'm tall. Somebody else has got to pass me my beer. There's not enough room to stretch out. That was great.
How about this? This might be more in line with you, Gage. no line in the bathroom. That's excellent. I know you have a bladder issue sometimes. It's very simple. You could go 4, 5, 6 times without even missing like a snap if you were that quick.
Me personally, I still think that they should put TVs in the bathroom. Completely unrelated. I still think that that should be a thing. But anyway, yeah, no, I think it's great to have fans in the stands again. I got into an argument on Twitter the other day where someone was saying fans are the only thing that make games good, and this came right after the water bottle being thrown at Kyrie incident, which we don't have to get into everybody's opinions on Kyrie Irving, but if you think that throwing water bottles or throwing anything else to professional athletes is okay, you don't need to be there. I said I was okay with fans not being at games because I've quickly learned again fans didn't need to be there in the first place because they can't handle themselves. So, yeah, having fans at games is awesome. It's going to be great to, like you said, Matt, help the local economy, because since Green Bay is – like I got somebody tried to tell me that Green Bay is not a small market. No, Green Bay is a small market. There is it's a very tiny town. I think that in terms of the Big Four sports, they are the far and away smallest – city in terms of population, and it's like they're smaller than a vast majority of cities that don't even have sports teams. Oh, yeah. But it's great for that aspect of things, and you can really see how much Packer fans and just fans in general really help rally this team. Like, this team really loves the community you get, and they're just – because their fixture's in it. You don't think of Green Bay – like, the few times I've visited, I don't think of it as this booming metropolis where I'm never going to see a professional player. I think that I could be riding my bike down the street, and I'm going to see Aaron Jones taking a walk, or I'm going to see Bob Tonyan going for a run down the street, and just all sorts of stuff like that, because these guys are literally just – the city and the team they're one. They're not two different entities. They are one thing together.
Yep. Or you see a quarterback with a 30 rack in the back of Bakhtiari's truck.
Also possible. Very possible. Especially since I drive past that intersection like a dozen times a week. So yeah, it's great. Like, honestly, like living in Green Bay, like there wasn't as much of an economic impact as they thought and projected. Thank goodness. There was some projections, I want to say, back in like May, like literally a year ago. They said if there was no games, it was going to make like 50% of businesses or maybe just hospitality businesses close. That is not the case. That just hasn't occurred yet. Maybe it will, but I don't see that happening. But overall, it's still good because, you know, 1 year, if you were able to keep your head above water, that's excellent. But at this point, like, you're like, okay, we've invested a lot of money into our restaurant, our bar, our pub, whatever it is, like, we need to have some of that extra money coming in with those home games. So it'll be great, and I love getting that vote of confidence from Murphy. It's a good question also. It's like, to be honest, it's the first good question we had, because the first two really weren't questions. They were more statements. So shout out from Greg from the metropolis of Toluca, Illinois.
Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or, if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
For sure. So let's jump down to our next one. This one's from Brian. Maybe not Brian Gutekunst, but maybe it is. Who knows? Saying he loved the draft this year, and obviously the brass is high on Jordan Love. That's how he's progressing. How is he on his feet? Scrap his grasp of the offense. Does he have the IQ to utilize his raw talent? Brian Gutekunst is doing a fine job keeping the team competitive and well-balanced. Murphy talked about it was a shame that Jordan, that the pandemic impacted his rookie year. Although it wasn't a wasted year, he had no in-person practice in the offseason and no preseason games. However, both Matt LaFleur and Nathaniel Hackett have said that they like what they've seen from him this offseason, Hackett said the biggest difference this year is his confidence and his decision-making, and his timing and accuracy have all improved, and it's helped for him to get reps with the first team. And the preseason will be crucial this year in his development. Pretty stock answer, but it's good to hear Mark talk a little bit about what Jordan Love is doing on the field.
Yeah, and our guy Bri here, you know, not only hits him with the first question, as I already alluded to, but hits him with 1, 2, 3, 4 questions. So really, really taking, you know, picking up the slack for his predecessors. But the IQ thing, that was kind of a weird. I don't understand. Like, he got a 27 on his Wonderlic. Like, you know, there's not a lot of stock in that, but it's not like an 8 or a 10. And like, he's a quarterback. He's gonna have to know how to play different offenses. And to be honest, to Murphy's point, yeah, that it absolutely sucks that we weren't able to see one Jordan Love in preseason. He wasn't able to work on his game with extra, you know, snaps. It's super unfortunate that he wasn't even able to be activated for a game last year. It'd have been awesome for him to even get some random, you know, victory formations under his belt, you know, make his rushing stats in the negative. I would have loved to see that, but at the end of the day, like, he's, from what I've seen thus far, yeah, is it a million-dollar question? For sure, but I think we have a couple thousand dollars worth of answers thus far. Like, we've seen some tape on him that looks really damn good, and, you know, say what you want about, you know, it just being in, you know, in shells and shorts, like, he's still doing well. Like, he's having his mechanics look a lot better in the videos we've seen. His throws are a little bit more efficient. And again, I remind people, when Aaron Rodgers came into the league from Cal, he was an absolute shambles of a human being when it came to his skill set, his mechanics, and he developed over a number of years and is still developing, as he spoke this last year about his timing and the way he drops steps and bounces. And like, Jordan will figure it out. It's just the problem is he's behind the curve, just like every rookie from last year that didn't have an opportunity. So, again, a lot of confidence from the brass, as Brian alluded to, and as they should. That's the future.
Yeah, and Mark pointed out something very important. It was a shame that it impacted so much of his rookie year, it being the pandemic. You look at Tua, Tagovailoa in Miami, who it came out this week where Tua said he didn't have a full grasp on the playbook, or he didn't know it as well as he should have. And then people said, well, shouldn't he have learned it? There's no excuse for that. And it's, the guy didn't have the entire offseason. He was rehabbing. There was all these other reasons. Jordan Love wasn't rehabbing, but again, didn't have the entire offseason. He was a quarterback who would have, it would have been huge for him to be able to really glob onto Aaron Rodgers during the summer last year, like, in like just as much as possible, and get to learn from him. He didn't get to do that. And also, I'm going to give Brian the benefit of the doubt on the IQ that he's talking about, the football IQ. Like, does he have the football intelligence to play? Because we've seen plenty of players who have regular intelligence but not have football intelligence, and vice versa, and then just raw talent. We've seen guys who have a ton of raw talent and just have no clue how to use it. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that that's what he's referring to. I think that Jordan Love is anybody that just doesn't pay that close of attention to the draft only saw the final year of Jordan Love. Go watch his second to last year, where he was an astounding young player, and the ceiling, like, and the talent level was very clearly there, and you could see how much he could do. And then he lost his head coach and basically every top receiving weapon that he had, and he had a bad year. Duh, that's going to happen. When you lose all of your weapons and then your head coach and everything's just changed around, you're probably not going to do as well. So I think that Mark does a great job of answering this question, all four of these questions, while remaining coy, like somewhat coy about it. Like, he doesn't ever come out and say, oh yeah, no, he's ready to replace Aaron Rodgers, or oh, he's ready to go do this and that. It's just, he's getting better. He's getting reps with the ones. He's like, the coaches, and obviously their coaches they're not gonna say he's been bad. They're not gonna come out and do that, but he's answering all these questions while at the same time keeping his cards close to his chest, so that way there's not too much going on. Because if you heap too much praise on Jordan Love, that puts too high of expectations on him, and they don't want to do that. They want to let him grow and develop into the talented player that they can believe he can be. And I'm with him. I think that he can be a extremely talented player in the league once he is fully developed. I'm just excited to see when we get to that bridge.
For sure, and there's very much of the athletic director of Mark Murphy in that response. I mean, that's what I mean, coming from his work at Northwestern, that there's very much that kind of vibe. So let's again lighten things up. We'll get to our last question. That's Bryce from Sparta, Wisconsin, and he says he read that the Packers would be getting new alternate uniforms, hoping for the Packers 60 uniforms himself with the striped socks. And Murphy confirmed that there will be a historic third uniform being worn at a home game this year, and they're not going to fully introduce it yet. They will include a shade of the color green. They'll unveil them closer to the season on social media and Packers.com. I'm looking forward to this, and I know neither of us are huge fans of the Acme Packers or the blues that they that Curly Lambeau liked, being a Notre Dame guy that he was. But there were some interesting greens that they used before the Lombardi years that were pretty fascinating. And there could be some really interesting combinations that they bring if they truly bring back, like, basically just a repeat of what they had back in the day. And especially if they bring back the long sleeves.
Oh, long sleeves. Oh, God. That's terrible. No long sleeves. That, I mean, it would be a cool jersey to own as a fan, but I can't imagine playing in long sleeves. That seems like an absolute disaster for a football player. But Mark put a little pressure on the social media team with multiple social media posts. You don't even get one. Like, we can't just do like one big PR or like one social push from them. But overall, like, yeah, I think like you said, Mike, we being us three aren't fans of the Acme Packing jerseys. I'd never like those. I think they're stupid, to be honest. I just don't like anything about them, from the socks, the pants, the helmet, to the, especially the jerseys. I am a fan of like those 60s. I think you called it a Kelly green. I'm trying to find the Pantone color of it. Super nerdy here, but like at the end of the day, like, just there's not a lot of creativity you can have with these Packers jerseys. The Packers are obviously a very traditional team. They're not going super outside the box. We're not getting like the Bumblebee jerseys. We're not getting anything, you know, that crazy. We're not getting any like, you know, lime green jerseys or anything, you know, that bizarre. The most creativity you can have is like in Madden, as I referenced before, recorded, and get the pea green, the pea yellow jerseys, the yellow and yellows. But I know Gage has some opinions on this. All I really want is just no more Acme Packing, and give me some, like he alluded to, like that 60s vibe back at, you know, Ray Nitschke in those glory years. So, but I know Gage is pretty opinionated on that, so I'll let him have the floor now on the jerseys.
Yeah, I'm not going to say too much on the Acme uniforms. You addressed it thoroughly. I don't think they look good. I've never thought they looked good. I understand respecting the history and whatever, and to the people that want to come and tell me to get off their lawn and respect my history, I don't really care what you have to say. I think the color rush uniforms are great. Give me all white uniforms as the third one. I think they look so crisp. Like the all white, you got the white top with the white pants and then the green number. You don't need to do anything else. Mm-hmm. The helmets are fine. You don't need to change the color of the helmet. You don't, which I still think that NFL teams should be allowed to have alternate helmets. I don't agree with this whole like, oh, well, we're only going to have one helmet per team. I don't think that looks good. I think you should be able to change up helmets. But anyway, for the third uniform, just make it an all white, white top, white bottom, green pants. You don't need to do anything else, because that uniform looks so good. And I always got so frustrated when it would be a color rush night and they're like, okay, Packers are wearing their greens, and it's just a green uniform or whatever. And it's, I see other teams wear like the Bucks, who have like a all red uniform, or the Saints and the Raiders, who both have very similar uniforms in that it's like an all white with a look. The number is either silver or gold, depending on if it's Saints or Raiders. I think they look so good. I've never understood it.
Those
uniforms are so good. The teams that go really out there, like the Rams super yellows, which I'm not a huge fan of the all yellow Rams uniform. I think it's a little much, but at the same time, it's different. And I like the fact that it's different. The Green Bay uniform, like the all white one, It looks so good, and I wish that they would wear it more. I always get a little bit frustrated when they don't wear it, because I'm like, this was a chance, you could have done it, and they're not going to. It's going to be another green uniform, which is fine. I don't get to make these decisions, but it just – the all-white one looks so, so good. And then the best part about it is when you come out at the end of a game and your quarterback's jersey is still all-white, his pants are still all-white, because the only green he has is from when he kneeled down one time. That just tells the offensive line, hey, we did our job today. The laundry guys are going to love us, because quarterback's uniform's clean. They don't have to worry about cleaning it that hard this week. So Yeah, I love the all-white uniforms. I wish that that's what they would go to as the third uniform or the alternate uniform. I understand the Green Bay is probably not going to. They've always been a little more conservative on the uniforms, and I understand. That's fine. That's your decision to make. But as a fan, that's what I would like to see. Like, if every 3 weeks they busted out, like, an all-white uniform and I get to see Rodgers dropping dimes in an all-white uni to Davante Adams, who's got his bright yellow cleats on, and he's just dicing up corners, that's just – that's chef's kiss right there.
Yeah, I'm with both of you guys to an extent. I do like the all-whites, and they're really sharp on primetime. The lights of a night game really make them pop. And I remember when they first said, they were going all-white, and everyone was mad. Like, well, why aren't they going all-green or all-yellow? Well, all-green blends in, and then you look like the Jets, and that's never a good thing. And the all-yellows, you look like you need to get to a doctor. But the all-whites were very, very sharp. And I think those still might be around for a prime time, for a Thursday night game. I can see them keeping those. But I think with what these alternate thirds will be, it'll be for a home game. I'm guessing it'll be an outside of conference game probably. And there's been some other older jerseys that were in before Lombardi that were a lighter shade of green, almost like a Christmas green look. Very, very tame, very light. And I know there is one that there's not a good history behind the uniform because it was used, I think, just once. It was clearly Lambeau made it for their when they won the championship and they played the college all-star team. And the jerseys were such bad quality. I think they were wool that they were playing in, like, California, and the players all melted in the heat and they lost to the college all-star team. And so I remember reading about that, and that didn't go well. But I think it might be like a lighter shade of green, and kind of like a throwback to the 50s, and especially with Bobby Dylan going to the Hall of Fame this past year, a throwback to maybe try and redeem what was a dark era in Packers history back in the 50s, something like that. But it's fun to talk about stuff like this. And again, credit to Mark Murphy for this column. It's been over the past few years that he's done this, it's been a good insight into the mind of the guy, into his sense of humor, and the way he is, and also the way he kind of acts. He does play it safe a little bit, but he also does answer some questions in a roundabout way that needed to be answered, and I do appreciate that. So as we wrap things up, Matt, we'll go to you first. What are you working on now?
Just getting ready for, you know, football to happen. Training camp, I'm going to try to get there. We got some stuff in the works for Packaday Podcast, I know, as we get towards actual real football, so bear with us. Hope you guys are liking these off topics. I know a lot of the other the duos and the trios of Packaday Podcast are trying to come up with new content for you guys, so send us all your suggestions, and hopefully you're enjoying some of this more lighthearted content. We have some stuff in the works for Game On Wisconsin. We got a couple of meetings here coming up in the next few weeks, so look out for some things progressing that way. And really just kind of enjoying the summer. It's nice. I'm actually recording at my house tonight or today instead of in a vehicle. Shout out once again, Sturgeon Bay Library. Excellent Wi-Fi in the parking lot to record last weekend. But other than that, I'm honestly just super stoked for training camp, and especially excited for preseason to see Jordan Love and some of these younger guys to really just take a look at what the offensive line is going to look like, the secondary, and et cetera, et cetera. But go Pack Go. And you can follow me on Twitter still at Matt_Frey_. That's at MATT_FRA_. DM me, tweet at me, let me know anything you guys ever want to talk about, my take on anything, and hopefully I'll have some good insight for you. Gage, what do you got going on, dude?
You can find me on Twitter, as always, at GBridgeForNFL. Still doing stuff for Rotoballer, Dynasty Nerds, and as well as Denver Stips. Denver Nuggets in round two of the playoffs against the Phoenix Suns is getting ready to kick off. I did my Film Friday series to kind of preview that. That came out yesterday, so not 2 days ago when you guys are hearing this. So working on player outlooks for Rotoballer right now, doing those, as well as just some other off-season content stuff, and really going to ramp that up here over the next 2 months and help get you guys prepared for winning your fantasy leagues. That's all I got for you, though.
Sounds good. And you can find me on Twitter at Mike Wendlandt, all one word, that last name, WENDLANDT. Also find all of the content at Packaday Podcast. Also, wherever your favorite podcast can be found, whatever platform you're looking for, it will be there. Also, check out Andy's work on the YouTube channel. That has been a great, great resource for us, and it's been really cool watching him work on that, and hopefully that continues going forward as well. And of course, check out the Pack a Day podcast tomorrow with Andy and company. They will be have another topic for you guys. Again, every day we will be here. We have not missed one yet. And so that being said, we'll say so long. For Matt Fralick and for Gage Bridgeford, this is Mike Wendland. Everyone, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe, stay cool, always carry the G, and go Pack Go.